I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm John McKenzie. We're certainly looking at him, but he's not top of our list. And finally, we are very much in the running for him, and we want to make it happen. Despite AC Milan's interest, it's only Josh Hobbs. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm good, mate. Been a little bit ill the last few days, so my voice is a bit croaky, so apologies if I'm spluttering all over this recording, but good to be on. Lots of stuff's going on.
Yeah, lots of stuff is going on. We're recording this on Tuesday lunchtime-ish, and Tyler Adams is due in to do a medical at some point today, so that's looking like it's going to happen. But there are plenty of other things going on. We've been linked to Luis Sinisterra. I'm not entirely sure what the position is on that, but we can talk about that in a minute. And then obviously there's the Charlotte Decatelara stuff and other things going on as well. So in this episode, we are going to talk about all of that stuff, do a little bit of scouting work on both Adams and Sinisterra, and generally talk about the activity of the window. But before we do that, I thought it would be good to talk a little bit about what is going on with the club's comms, because there's a lot of stuff coming out at the moment. There's obviously the whole Mohamed Camara stuff that was going around. It seems as though the club are leaking a lot at the moment. So interested in your thoughts on the way that we've approached this window from a sort of communications point of view.
Yeah, I think with Mo Camara, I think that one's kind of for a few people, it's going to leave them disappointed about Tyler Adams because he's a bit of a less exciting player than Camara. But I don't know if it's the club's fault in terms of hyping up Camara, because I don't think they necessarily ever put it out there as like we are all the way in for Camara. It was a bit more like it's always been that the journalists have said like Leeds like Tyler Adams, and if anything, the journalists this side of things I would say have always suggested that Adams is the one that they've been more likely to do, because they've always said they do also like Camara, but he's more expensive. Whereas, you know, it's been Twitter that's kind of made Camara sound like the one that was more likely to happen, not the actual media, so to speak. It's basically Big Don Mitchell on Twitter just telling everyone that Leeds are signing Camara, and that's doesn't seem to be happening. But I think Decatelara, if that doesn't come through, which I would say we both think it feels unlikely, but we would have said beforehand, like, well, that's never going to happen. But then I think Radrizzani seems to have put it out to Fabrizio Romano, and then he's pushed it, and then Phil started reporting on it, The Athletic, and the more the reports were happening, the more you start to think, oh, maybe this isn't as unlikely as we thought. And then suddenly it's like, and now Milan are bidding, and it makes it look like Leeds won't get him. I think in that case, the club have made a mistake in trying to sort of put out the information about an exciting target, because now all it does is whoever we get instead of him is going to be a little less exciting. Whereas I think if we'd have just been in for whoever was going to be the number one target, then we would probably feel better about it.
How much of this do you think is to do with the fact that Rafinha keeps rumbling on, the Rafinha saga?
I think it's a huge part of it, because I think maybe they thought they had a good chance to get the Kitalara if they could go quickly, whilst Milan weren't quite deciding what they were doing. Leicester's interest seems to be genuine, but also not active. So I think if we were active, we could have got him, although he could have just done what Rafinha's done with Chelsea and been like, well, you know, thanks for the bid, but also I'm waiting for the team that I actually want to join. So that might not have worked, but I think it might have given us a better chance at least.
Yeah, I was going to talk about Kitalara at the end of the podcast, but I think it's probably the best place to talk about him here at this point. So, as you've mentioned, it does look as though there's going to be a bit of a bidding war over him now. I think there was a few more clubs that were mentioned this morning who are starting to sniff around.
Yeah, so Arsenal and Lyon both mentioned.
Yeah, and both clubs that it sort of makes sense for him to go to. So, yeah, in terms of the expectation you have now that we are going to get Kitalara, it's presumably pretty low.
Yeah, I think I would say now I would be shocked if we got him now.
And so from that point onwards, then, what's your expectation from the position that we were trying to fill with Kitalara? Did you see him as being a striker option, and then do you have any idea of like who the other options are going to be?
He's not who I thought we would be in for. Cause obviously, for those listeners that heard our Authors List episode, we mentioned him as an option that could be looked at. But we said two reasons why we didn't have him like as our choice. And one was, well, we probably won't be able to get him in the first place. And two, he's probably a bit more of an attacking midfielder. However, I think Leeds seemed to like him because he was sort of a very complete option who could basically play any of the attacking roles that Jesse Marsh wants in either the 4-2-2-2 or in the 4-2-3-1. I think anybody else that we go for will probably just be a number nine. I don't think there are other players out there who are as rounded, as technically gifted as he is, that we could possibly get. Like if you go back to the link that we had before the Kitalara, it was Arno Calimwendo from PSG, and he's much more of a pure number nine. I think he's played the odd game on the left, but really he's a striker who wants to kind of mostly run in behind. He'll do a bit of dropping in to receive the ball here and there, but he mostly wants to stretch the last line. That's what I expect more, especially as before that there was the talk of Nketiah, and that's obviously what he is as well.
Cody Kakpo is another player that we've been linked with. Are you seeing him as probably the higher option than Sinisterra?
I think so. I think Kakpo obviously can play on the left and he can play up front. And I think that was one of the things that I liked about him. Also knowing the fact that he has experience playing in 4-2-2-2. I kind of doubt that he will be now the one that we're going for as a striker. Although I do wonder if the reason why we went for Sinisterra over Kakpo was because we maybe didn't have the cash come in that we were hoping for because Rafinha's not been sold yet. So we went for that sort of slightly lesser option and we were going to wait to spend big on the Kitalara. So maybe if we thought, oh, well, we've got a bit more money, we can now go for Kakpo because, again, he can play in various positions. But I wouldn't say he's as rounded. He's a bit more of like a drive with the ball type player, even if he does play up front, whereas with Kitalara, he can play a lot more competently back to goal.
And so if we assume that Tyler Adams is all done and Sinisterra is coming and that we're looking for a striker, are there any other areas where you think that we might see incomings in the rest of the window?
I think after that, it maybe depends on what happens with any other outgoings. Like it's going around Twitter again today because there's something in the Newcastle Athletic piece, but there's more talk about them wanting Harrison, and if they were to pay a huge fee for him, which is the only way I think we would let him go, then I think we would need to make another attacking signing. Otherwise, I just expect it to be the goalkeeper to come late on, And yeah, I think we know that Roberts is likely to go, but I have a feeling we just won't replace him and we'll just be saying, well, Joe Gellhart and Sam Greenwood are now like players that are higher up the hierarchy in the first place, so they'll just take the minutes that he had. If Rodrigo went, I think maybe we would replace him as well. And we've obviously talked about left back, but I think it sounds like we think Leo Hyelde is going to play there. Yeah, that's all. I think we would probably all feel a little bit more comfortable if we brought in a more experienced left back, but I think that's not going to be what happens.
Well, let's move on to the players who we are pretty convinced are going to end up at the club. So Tyler Adams, we mentioned, is heading over for a medical today. So all being well, he will be a Leeds United player next season. So Tyler Adams, I think most people will probably have a good sense of. We've talked about him a fair amount anyway, but a player who came through the New York Red Bull system, ended up making the step up to RB Leipzig in Germany. Has had an interesting time there. I note that he's not had more than 30 appearances in the league. In any season, I think, apart from one with the New York Red Bull. So a player who hasn't played a full amount of games for a club. But that's the sort of context for him. He's obviously a United States international player as well. Do you want to give us just a quick scout report on Tyler Adams?
Yeah, I think he's a funny one, is Adams, because it feels like a lot of people decided that he was awful. Which I didn't really understand. He's not particularly big. Like, I think I didn't check what his height is, but he's quite short, I would say. But he's very, I think he's quick and strong. He covers a lot of ground, and he will come in and replace Phillips as the sort of the primary ball winner. But as we've talked about before, I think in this double pivot, I think we will see the ball winner being ahead of the ball player in that too. So you kind of have Rocha dropping a bit deeper to take the ball in build up and spray it around, play it forwards into zone 14, and you'll have Adams basically charging around pressing. Obviously, they will cover primary sides of the pitch. So I think we'll see Rocha more on the left and Adams more on the right. I think the main thing that he's coming to do is press a lot from central midfield. We know that he is sort of he's a marsh man, if that's a way to put it, in that he's played for him in every team that Marsh has managed, apart from Salzburg. So we know that he's going to know the system, be that the 4-2-2, the 4-2-3-1, or the 3-4-3. I think he's going to play the role exactly as Marsh wants. And he's going to be super fit to do that, because he's sort of got that sort of like whip it like body shape and the way that he moves. On the ball, I think is where people have the bigger concerns, and I do understand that he's not incredibly exciting on the ball. He's quite basic in what he does in terms of passing. He's not gonna switch the ball like people love to see Phillips do, although I don't know that we'll do that much in this way of playing anyway. But I think he's a better ball carrier than Phillips. And I think he has some level of press resistance. He's not like Mo Kamara, who I think just had such good agility and used his body so well. And he can be a little bit lax in terms of if he's receiving it facing his own goal. I've noticed a few times where he does get caught by opposition midfielders pressing him, and he can make mistakes there, and that's obviously something to be a little bit more concerned about. But I think we'll primarily be going to Rocha in build up, so hopefully it won't be too much of an issue.
Yeah, and I suppose if you were to look at this transfer without any of that context that we've had with Mo Kamara behind it, you would just say this is a Phillips like for like replacement, pretty much for around half the price. So that's a good deal.
Yeah, I think so, because I think, I mean, we know that this view isn't incredibly popular, but I don't think either of us thinks beyond the long passing that Phillips could play out wide that he's particularly great on the ball. I think that his, because of that glamorous type of pass, there is that sort of overratedness. That's not the right phrase, but he gets overrated because of that in terms of how he can play with the ball. And with Adams, because he doesn't have that, it's like, oh, what can he do with the ball? Well, I think the thing he does better is carry it. And yeah, it's a good price. As I said, I think getting him and waiting for money from Rafinha, I think, is supposed to mean that we can spend more money on the final exciting signing. But who that's going to be now, we don't really know. But yeah, significantly cheaper than Kamara.
I think it's worth saying as well, I think more upside in the Marsh system in terms of like the on the ball stuff, because as you've already said, playing driven balls into channels cross field isn't particularly useful for a Marsh system. This is much more about ball carrying, getting the ball forward into those dangerous areas, the zone 14, as you've talked about it, and just being able to gain territory almost just by getting the ball into these more advanced areas in central spaces. And in that sense, Adams is going to fit this system much better than Phillips ever would, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think he will turn around some of the opinions that are made before they've ever seen him play, really, because I think he certainly has the kind of attitude that I think a lot of Leeds fans will like. He's that kind of really hard-working, industrious player. And I think it's in a position where his role isn't such that he has to be incredibly technical. Obviously, we don't want to have a double pivot of just pure workhorses. But if Rocca is next to him, or if it's, I don't know, Forshaw or Phillips is next to him, then Forshaw or Click is next to him, then you've got players that can play with the ball a little bit more. So I think that makes it okay. Yeah, I think it's just knowing what the expectation is of him. And yeah, we're now playing two in the deeper position rather than one. So the attributes will be different.
Is it worth maybe having a bit of a conversation about the more rounded option that we were thinking about in Mo Kamara? And I think this is all tied up with this idea of, as we've just said, like Adams fits the Marsh system well. But there are obviously uncertainties about what the future of the club will look like in terms of the tactical identity, should Jesse Marsh ever leave. So what are your thoughts on like having a more rounded option? Like, what do you think that the benefits of having a player like Mo Kamara would have been? And do you think it's simply that actually in the long term you end up with a better player in your squad? Or do you think there would have been any sort of tangible differences right now?
Well, I have to say that I'm surprised that Marsh would prefer to have Adams, unless it's almost that he knows him more. And so it's like, this is my guy. Like, this is my guy who I've worked with for a lot of years. And I really respect him as a person. And I know that he'll give all of this and so on. Because he's obviously managed both players. Like, he did manage Kamara at Salzburg as well, although not for as long a time as he's managed Adams. So I think he would know that Kamara is the better footballer. So it's either that is the reason, in that he's sort of gone for personal reasons over footballing ability, or it's that they just decided, well, this is our best, like we've weighed it all up, and in terms of value, like this is the best deal. Adams is a better deal than Kamara, even if we think Kamara is a better player. And we also have other transfer business to do, so we can't blow the budget on this one player when we think it's more important to spend elsewhere. That's my theory. I can't know it for sure, but I would agree that it's better to have that option who is, like Kamara's able to do all the ball-winning stuff, but he's also able to bring a lot more on the ball. I obviously would like that, and I do think that he would be a much better player in a different system as well in the future. Like if he goes to Brighton, I see Kamara like tearing it up there. I think he'll really, really fit them. But I also don't necessarily think that Adams under someone else is going to suddenly be trash. Like, I think he'll still be fine, because I think you see quite a lot of double pivots where you have one player that's more of the ball winner and the carrier, and you have the other one that's more of the ball player. It's quite a fairly like common thing to see.
Another area that we should talk about with Adams is that he has had injury concerns through his time. I don't know the extent of those injury concerns. I should probably look them up on Transfermarkt while you're answering this question. But I'm also just looking through the minutes he got last season, and he wasn't a particularly regular player in any sense for Leipzig last year. Do you have any thoughts on that aspect of it, the fact that it seems as though he'd fallen out of favour a little bit at Leipzig?
Well, I think Tedesco definitely didn't like him as much, so he didn't play as much after Marsh went, basically, is the way that I saw it. I think you see more of his starts came in the first half of the season. But he did play a bit as well under Julian Nagelsmann previously, so it's not like he wasn't. He's only got game time under Marsh. So I think that doesn't worry me too much. Like, I think in one sense it's quite good that he's not been like burnt out by last season, considering how many of the players that we have who basically got run into the ground last season. I'm actually looking at his injury record right now, and it feels like the longer breaks that he's had have come a few seasons ago. So last season he had like two separate injuries that were just for two games each, and any longer ones have been like back in 1920 and 1819 kind of thing. So I don't worry about that too much, but you can see that adductor problems comes up a few times, so maybe that's something to be aware of. And yeah, that's the main thing you can see there.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, let's move on to talk about Luis Sinisterra. He is a player who, I'm just going to pull up his Wikipedia page, actually, because I realised I haven't done this. Just googled Wikipedia rather than Luis Sinisterra, which was not helpful. But Luis Sinisterra is a player who currently plays at Feyenoord in the Eredivisie. He is a Colombian player. He is 23 years old. He's only ever played before that at a Colombian club called Once Caldas. That's probably not how you pronounce it. Probably Once Caldas. So I'm just exposing myself as a fraud here, but he's played for Colombia, the full team, and for the youth systems as well. Really exciting player, had a really good season this season for Feyenoord, particularly I think in the Europa League, which is where I came across him, or maybe in the Conference League as well. I think they dropped into that. Yeah. But yeah, really exciting player who you, I know, have been doing a lot of watching of since the news broke. So yeah, quick scouting report on Sinisterra.
Yeah, so I did know him before because I've watched a fair bit of Feyenoord anyway. But I've always sort of paid attention to him, but I've often been like looking at his teammate, Orkun Kürçü, a little bit more. So I kind of had in my head a little bit more of a player that's quite a lot like Rafinha, wants to play wide, but on the opposite side, and then drift inside. But the more that I've been watching of him, I think that wasn't quite right. I think he's a lot more comfortable inside the pitch than Rafinha actually is. And part of that is the way that he strides with the ball. So if you watch Rafinha dribbling with the ball, he really likes to like stretch his legs out and sprint into space. I think if you watch Sinisterra, he carries the ball quite a bit closer to him. His strides are a lot shorter, and he kind of carries the ball quite close to the opposition, then nicks it away from them. And he will run into traffic quite a lot and dribble through several players. You won't see that as often with Rafinha because he likes to stretch out so much, which is why I feel quite a lot better about this, actually, in terms of him playing in narrow ball, whereas we kind of know that it never really worked for Rafinha. And Rafinha looked better in the later games as Leeds sort of stretched the pitch again a bit more. But I think as we expect Marsh to return to more of his previous principles, I think we'll see Sinisterra playing for Leeds as more of like a left inside forward, probably in a 4-2-3-1 or in that 4-2-2-2. I think he'll be just behind the two strikers, playing in that sort of narrow left position, coming inside to shoot with his left foot, which is really his right foot. Sorry, he strikes the ball really well. He's small and agile, but he has real strength to him, like a good center of gravity. He can't be knocked off the ball really easily. I think this is really exciting. I wanted Cody Gakpo because I sort of saw him as sort of a physical beast as well as like an output guy, and I thought that would help him with adapting to the Premier League. But I also think in a different way, Sinisterra's attributes also look like they can fit well into the Premier League, because I think he's so technically good with the ball that I think that shines at any level. As long as you've got that thing that makes you elite quality, I think you can still adapt in the Premier League.
Yeah, and I think this is a really exciting signing as well. It's the sort of player that I think we would have wanted to see being linked to in the beginning of the window, and so it's great to see this sort of thing coming through. I do think that there's still that weirdness of, like, because we've been linked to so many fun, exciting players, that when those sort of really top level elite players aren't coming through, a player like Sinisterra maybe feels a little bit less, feels a little bit underwhelming, I suppose. But I do think that Sinisterra is just an excellent player for the sort of team that we are right now. And I'll be happy if we make signings like this throughout the rest of the window. And interesting hearing you talking about the way that he dribbles. He reminds me a little bit of Jack Grealish in terms of his dribbling, because he's one of those players who sort of likes to keep the ball back in his stance when he's carrying it forward almost, and he likes to sort of tempt players in, so he almost plays against the player and is going to go around them. Whereas I think Rafinha is a sort of player. Rafinha does move the ball like that a little bit too, but Rafinha is, I think, someone who can often beat players just through sheer athleticism as well, which is why he probably thrives a little bit better in open spaces. Whereas with Sinisterra, it's very much about being able to control the ball and being able to respond quickly to opposition players stepping in towards him. I think that's going to be interesting, and it will be interesting to see how he fits into the system, as you've said. I suppose my question would be is that, like, whilst I agree that the style of play that you're talking about does suit that style of play, the Red Bull style of play, it is very much still the case that he is a player who likes to play, start out wide and come inside, and I guess he wouldn't be doing that so much in our system. So have you got any thoughts on the sort of, I guess, the portability between, like, being someone who's then going to be expected to pick the ball up in more central spaces? I think he does do that, but I do think that he either likes to move inside out or outside in. He sort of likes those diagonal moments. How do you think that he would fit into a more direct approach?
Yeah, I think I've kind of looked out for this when watching him in the last day and a half. He definitely does receive it out wide, or he receives in the middle and comes to out wide and then tries to attack the box from wide. Like, that all happens, but I was careful to look out for how often he would drift inside to come into the half space to receive the ball, even if it's just to bounce it back to a midfielder or a defender and then get involved with the play again. He does that a lot. He's not sort of pinned out wide. And I think Rafinha probably wanted to stay wide quite a bit more than I think Sinisterra wants to stay wide. And I think, you know, he's 23. He obviously has his sort of traits and the way that he likes to move and receive the ball. But I also think that he's at the point where he could still be drilled to do things differently in terms of where he moves. And he has the technical quality to do that. So I think it might take a bit of work, and I'm glad that it looks like we're going to sign him before we go off on tour. So he's going to have time to work on this through the summer and get up to speed in it. But I think I've seen him do it enough off of his own back or in Arne Slot's Feyenoord system that he can do it. So if he's told to do it, like, well, this is mostly what you're going to do, I don't think he'll have a problem with it.
Mm. You mentioned at the end of your sort of scouting spiel that you're happy that he'll be able to make the step up. But it is worth talking a little bit about that, because I think that is one of the things that people do talk about, and especially, I suppose, this window where we've been signing players from maybe leagues lower down the hierarchy of European football.
Yeah.
So do you have any thoughts on that aspect of it in terms of the step up? What are the things that you are thinking about when you're watching him in terms of trying to assess whether or not he would be able to make that step up?
Well, I think there's a couple of things to be aware of here. One is that he scored 23 goals last season and I think something like 14 assists or something like that. And we need to remember that that's playing in one of the best teams, both in the Eredivisie and in the Conference League. So that's a team that's expected to be winning games. They're on top, so they're able to get the ball to him in dangerous positions a lot more. We don't really know how good we're going to be in the Premier League next season yet, although I think it's safe to say that we're more likely to be in the bottom half than we are in going for 10th or anything like that. We're not going to see him hit the same output anyway. But then you also need to consider that the Eredivisie is a much weaker league than the Premier League, and the style of league is different as well, in that the defenders are obviously a lot more physical than they are in the Eredivisie. So it's a different kind of different kind of defenders that you have to face, so it involves having a more specific skill set. I think that he's got that skill set. It's kind of not like he's a player that has only been able to run in behind, and so therefore if he comes up to face defences that don't give space to run in behind, he's not going to be able to do that, because I think he's got enough skill to play in front of teams. But yeah, it's just that thing that gets talked about a lot. Obviously, John, you made your video on the Bundesliga tax for Tifo, and you sort of concluded in that video anyway that it's more of a tax of just moving into the Premier League from whatever league you come from, and it certainly has happened with other Eredivisie signings where they are putting up like massive numbers in the Eredivisie and then they don't translate across. But I think for us, in terms of what his attributes are, it's going to bring something different for us that we won't have once Rafinha's gone. Maybe he's not going to score 10 goals, but if he gets, like, I don't know, like 6-7 goals and gets 5 assists and we've got other goals coming from elsewhere, that will be good for us.
Yeah, and I think, as I always say in these situations, it's well worth checking out his European performances, because we know that he has performed well in Europe against different teams. Yeah. He's come up against some good sides from Europe, and so that should relax people a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just literally watched the first leg of the Conference League semi-final, and that was against Marseille. So, like, yes, it's the Conference League, and I think some people have kind of written off that tournament already. But personally, I think there's a lot of good stuff in that tournament. A lot of good teams in that tournament. Marseille qualified for the Champions League in France. That's a strong top five leagues team. And he scored and got an assist in that game. It was an interesting one because Marseille were quite on top in the game and he wasn't in the game as much as you might like him to be. But when he was in the game, he was really, really effective. He was dribbling through players. He made a really nice assist for Cyril Dessers with a back heel on the edge of the box. He scored with a first time shot from a cutback from Reece Nelson. So I think there is an effective player in that I think would fit in kind of any of the top five leagues. And yeah, I'm going to be carrying on watching some more, but I think this is one that we should be confident about being good. You always have to qualify it with that. You kind of never know until you see it. With these kinds of deals where players are moving from one league to another or quite a different style team. But I think there's enough of the attributes there that suggest a good fit for the team and for the league.
Yeah, I guess Crescencio Somerville is a good example of that, right? In that we know exactly how good Somerville can be playing for the under-23s, and yet he's never managed to make that step up to the Premier League in any convincing way. So I think it's definitely worth Leeds fans thinking about that. I'm with you. I think that Sinisterra is going to be fine. The step up will be fine, but there does have to be that recognition that moving from one league to another can have that kind of massive impact on your output.
Yeah, for sure. And I think with Somerville, I think the attributes are still there that he can do it, but there's something with him where we haven't quite seen the confidence almost. This is what I keep saying with him is we haven't seen him play his same game that he plays in the under-23s, whereas we have seen Joffe play his same game after, like, I don't know, a short little adaptation period when he came on as a sub in the Cup and when he came on as a sub against Southampton, couldn't really get in the game. And then in that Wolves game, there was like a light bulb moment where he took a shot and it was pushed over the bar. And suddenly he was like, hang on, I can affect this game. And then ever since then, he's been a player trying to make things happen. Don't think we've quite seen that with Somerville. But I think with Sinisterra, I don't think you're going to see that same kind of, crisis of confidence when he first comes in. Because he's already been playing in senior football for a long time.
Okay, well, I think that brings us to the end of the players that we're considering. But I am interested, before we finish, in terms of just maybe the big picture stuff now, like how are you feeling in general about the window? Because I think in many respects it's been a good window so far. We've got players in early that we've needed to bring in. I think there's always going to be the expectation that we could have brought in better players. But I think that, again, over exaggerates perhaps the sorts of players that we can bring in. And so I think when we get to the end of this window, we're going to have a much stronger squad. We're going to have a much deeper squad and we're going to have a much broader squad in as much as we will have a lot more players to choose from. So you must be pretty happy with the window so far, yeah?
Yeah, I think I feel pretty positive about it. I think the way I'll describe it is I think we probably have brought the ceiling down a little bit. I don't think we were going to be able to sell Rafinha and Phillips and not see the ceiling of the squad come down a bit. But I think in the two players that are replacing them in Adams and in Sinisterra, it's not coming down hugely, I hope. But clearly we're bringing up the floor level of the squad. I think we're fleshing it out with a lot more quality overall. So if Christensen is now first choice right back rather than going to Shackleton if someone's injured, you now probably go, well, now we've got Luke Ayling as backup. Forshaw, I think we all felt that Forshaw did very well last season, but I think he probably is more of a backup player in the Premier League, and he'll be good for us in that regard. Click as a backup central midfielder, that's good. We still need to see the striker situation sorted, and we obviously would like that to be sorted with someone really exciting who helps raise the bar again for the squad level. But yeah, I think that's the area where I still have a little bit of concern, just knowing how much we struggled last season with Bamford injured. But I mean, we're hoping that's not going to happen again, but we can't like presume that that won't happen again. But yeah, overall, a lot better. And I think the one that I'm sort of excited about is Rocha. I think he could be really good for us. We know that there's going to be that adjustment to playing in the Premier League. We know that he hasn't played lots in the last few years. But if he can be the player that we think he is, then that could be a really astute signing for us.
And then in terms of what you expect from the starting 11 when we go into the season, do you have any thoughts on what that's actually going to look like practically?
I think how I'm seeing it at the moment, like we need to not take into account whoever might be the other striker. But I think I'm seeing it as obviously Melier's in goal, and it's going to be the back four of Christensen. And then it's between, I think the four centre-backs, I think it's hard to say who it's going to be. But I have a feeling that this might be the time where Koch oust Llorente. I hope that's what happens, but not 100% sure. I think Cooper will continue to start a left centre back, but I think we could see Strauch sort of finally make that hit his position as the season goes on. Junior Firpo is going to carry on at left back. We'll see how that goes. And then, I think we know the midfield too is most likely to be Rocha and Adams. And then we've got options ahead of that, because I think you could see in the 4-2-2, you could see Sinisterra on the left and Harrison on the right, or you could see Aronson playing either one of those two. There's James as an option as well. I think I would personally prefer him to just be the sub option. And then you've got Gelhardt and Rodrigo and Bamford as your striker options currently, with Gelhardt and Rodrigo both able also to play as a 10 if it's a 4-2-3-1, as well as Aronson being able to do that as well. So I think that we're able to be more flexible, and we're also able to rotate more without seeing as much of a drop off in quality. And that's without even saying that we could also play with a 3 at the back, because we've got the squad to do that as well. It'd be interesting to see if Marsh is more flexible depending on opponents or whatever we see. But my gut is that we'll see the 4-2-4-2-2 more, but it's going to be interesting to see in this next week or two, when the friendlies start happening, what do we start to see?
Yeah, and it's worth saying, I think that the 4-2-2 and the 4-2-3-1 are basically the same depending on the player in the second striker position, right? The profile of that player.
And you see them rotating like from one attack to the other. Like it will look like that diamond that the front four of the 4-2-3-1 can look like, or it will look like the almost like the square of the 4-2-2.
Like you say, that diamond can come from the 4-2-3-1 as well, right? With usually it will be the more aggressive presser pushing forward a little bit. So it'll probably be Adams pushing forward and then Rocha sitting a little bit deep. There'll be flexibility in possession as well, I think. So lots of interesting things to look forward to. I guess the first friendly game is this week, the end of this week, right? On Friday, I think, against Blackpool.
I think it's Thursday evening. Yeah, I think it's Thursday evening against Blackpool. So that would be interesting, because I presume that we won't really see the internationals. I mean, they came back to training yesterday, but they had testing for at least the first half a day, maybe the whole day. So I think perhaps they might not play, or they might just play, I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour. So it'd probably be more the team that played in the behind closed doors game.
Yeah, and so that gives us some football to talk about in the next episode. We will be back next week. And hopefully you've enjoyed this classic John and Josh episode. Josh, thanks for coming on. It's been great chatting, as always.
Thanks, mate.
And we'll see you all next week.
Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.